Chapter 39. The Trouts had booked a beachside hotel room with a balcony that overlooked the harbor and offered an unimpeded view of the distant shipping docks. Since arriving in Rio, they had taken turns sitting on the balcony watching the transmitter ships. Trout brought Gamay a cold glass of orange juice and pulled up a chair beside her. "Anything happening?" Gamay raised the binoculars to her eyes and studied a long shipping dock on the other side of the harbor. "The transmitter ships haven't moved an inch since we got here." Trout borrowed the binoculars and inspected three ships tied up parallel to the dock. "Did you notice that the liner is gone?"
"It was there yesterday."
"They must have left before we got up this morning." Gamay had wondered what a passenger ship was doing in a cargo vessel area. They had read the name painted on the stern, Polar Adventure. But neither one of them had given the vessel much thought. They had been more interested in the three cargo ships, which were named Polaris 1, 2, and 3, after the Northern Pole Star.
"I think we should take a closer look," Paul said.
"My thoughts exactly.
I'm about ready to go for a ride." Minutes later, they were driving along the edge of the harbor. The resort hotels thinned out, and the neighborhood they were passing through became more commercial. Eventually, they came to a concentration of warehouses, shipping company offices, and maritime buildings. They passed several container ships and went by the empty berth formerly occupied by the ocean liner. A guardhouse had been set up near the three vessels they had seen from the hotel. Standing outside the structure was a beefy guard who carried a sidearm and a rifle. He was smoking a cigarette and talking to a longshoreman. Paul kept the car at the same speed so he wouldn't attract attention, but he drove slowly enough for Gamay to give the ships a quick but thorough inspection.
"Any other guards?" Trout said.
"Only the one that I could see. There may be more on board."
"Maybe not. They wouldn't want to attract attention by having too many security guys hanging around. This could be a golden opportunity to snoop around."
"Yes, but he had a very big gun. How do you propose to get past that?"
Trout gave Gamay a lopsided grin.
"I was thinking that a beautiful woman could provide a, diversion."
"Here we go again. Cherchez la femme. The oldest trick in the book. Do you think he'll fall for a ruse like that?"
"You're kidding," Trout said with a chuckle. "We're talking about a hot-blooded Latin male."
"Unfortunately," Gamay said with a sigh, "I think that you're right. Okay, I'll do my Mata Hari impression, but you're buying dinner."
A half hour later, they were back in their hotel room. Paul mixed a couple of cool rum drinks, and they sat on the balcony, sipping from their glasses and taking turns watching the ships through binoculars until the sun went down. After a dinner sent up by room service, Gamay took a shower, doused herself with perfume, and slipped into a low-cut red dress. Beautiful women abound in Rio, but Gamay drew every male eye in the lobby when she and Trout crossed to the hotel entrance. The shipping dock had undergone a stark personality change. The trucks, longshoremen, and stevedores had left for the day, and the dock area had developed a rank, sinister atmosphere. Unevenly spaced pole lamps cast yellow puddles of light that were diffused by a fog that had moved in from the harbor. A foghorn moaned in the distance. Gamay drove past the empty berth formerly occupied by the Polar Adventure and pulled the car over and parked under a lamppost near the guardhouse. She got out of the car, stood in the light, and took a swig from a bottle of rum. With noisy fanfare, she raised the hood and poked her head underneath. Then, swearing loudly in Spanish, she kicked the fender, looked around, and waved at the guard. Weaving as she walked, she made her way over to the guardhouse. The guard was a dark-complexioned, muscular man with an expression of bored suspicion on his flat-featured face. Gamay spoke perfect Spanish, but for the benefit of the guard, she slurred her words. She said her stupid car had stalled and asked him to come take a look. He glanced at the car, which was partially obscured by the shadows, hesitating.
Don't tell me you're afraid of me with that big gun you're carrying.
She staggered and seemed to fall before she grabbed the guard's shoulder and gave him a blast of rum-soaked breath. The appeal of a sexy, drunk woman and the veiled insult to his manhood did the trick. He laughed lustily and put his arm around her shoulder. Gamay laughed, too, and they made their way back to the car.
I think they gypped me and there's no engine, she said, placing her hands on her hips.
She was gambling that he would follow the male instinct to stick his head under the car hood. When he did, Trout stepped out of the shadows, tapped him on the shoulder, then dropped the guard with a powerful right cross. With Gamay's help, they gagged and tied the dazed guard with towels borrowed from the hotel, took his guns and stuffed him in the back seat of the car. Trout put the man's cap on his head, slipped a flashlight into his windbreaker pocket, and tucked the pistol in his belt. Call in the cavalry if I'm not back in 20 minutes. Gamay hefted the rifle.
Be careful, she said, giving him a peck on the cheek. You're looking at the cavalry.
Trout would rather have Gamay at his back than 100 John Waynes. She was an expert marksman, and anyone caught in her sights would have a short life. He swiftly climbed to the top of the gangway and looked around the deck. The fog that hung over the ship and dampened the deck lights would make him less visible, but it would also provide cover for any guards watching the deck. He had seen the photos Austin and Zavala had taken of the ship exhumed by the whirlpool and had a general idea of the layout. He blindly navigated his way through the murk and managed to find the superstructure without slamming face first into it. He felt his way along the exterior until his groping fingers came to a door. He stepped into a darkened space and flicked on the flashlight he had borrowed from the guard. A companionway led to a deck below. Clutching the guard's pistol in his free hand, he descended the stairs and followed a maze of corridors. At the end of one passageway, he paused and put his ear against a metal door, then tried the handle. The door was unlocked. He opened it and stepped through. His footsteps echoed as he slowly made his way to a railing and saw that he was standing on a balcony. He was in a cavernous space that must be the generator room Austin and Zavala had described. He flashed his light around and realized why there was only one man guarding the ships. There was nothing to guard. The room was empty. Trout made his way back to the main deck. Austin had talked about a shaft that ran down through the hull from the deck to the water. He finally found it, along with the framework around the rectangular opening. But there was no sign of the cone-shaped structure. The ship seemed to have been stripped clean. He pondered the idea of checking out the control room, but decided that there wasn't time. Gamay would storm the ship in search of Trout if he didn't come back when promised. He headed for the gangway. The guard had regained consciousness, and Gamay had to threaten him with his gun to quiet him down, but other than that, there had been no incident.
What did you find? She said.
Nothing. And that's what's so interesting. My guess is that the other ships are stripped down, too. They dragged the guard from the car and left him in the shadows. He had started struggling against his makeshift bindings. With a little more effort, he would be able to free himself. About 100 feet from the guardhouse, they tossed his guns into the harbor. There was little chance that he would raise the alarm once he got free. His employers would not be pleased if they learned he had fallen down on the job. He would have enough trouble explaining what happened to his weapons. On the drive back to the hotel, Trout described his search of the ship and the surprising results.
But why? And what did they do with all that stuff?
Trout shook his head, picked up his cell phone, and punched out a number from the directory. We'll let Kurt figure that one out.